We're not called as Christians to be lone rangers in reaching people with the gospel. We're called to be doing that together in community as God's people, as a church. Making Jesus known verbally, but also through that care and that collective witness that we show as a church.
Yeah.
And in my mind, the most effective way for reaching the UK with the gospel is to see lots more church plants scattered.
Yeah. Graham, if only you just preached on that at the 2025 Leaders Conference, we could put a link to it. Hello and welcome to Independence, the FIC podcast for church leaders. Thank you so much for joining us, whether you are a FIC church leader or any other kind of church leader, you're very welcome. And I'm joined by two other church leaders, Graham Bynan. Hello, Graham.
Hi, Adrian. Nice to be with you.
Graham is one of our associate national directors in the FIC.
I am, and Adrian's the other one.
There you go. Between us, we are the associate national directors. We're a little union all on our own. And Mark Selby, fresh from his 147 break at the Crucible. Are you Mark Selby?
I am the other one.
Any relation to that
one? No relation at all.
He's entertaining, that Mark Selby, but you, Mark Selby, are doing much more important work in the Lord's Kingdom.
I would hope so.
And we're looking forward to hearing about that. Just tell us who you are and where you are.
Yep, okay, so I'm the other Mark Selby.
I think he's the other Mark Selby.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I'm in Hilton, which is just south of Derby. We've been there for 12 years. We started a church plant there 12 years ago. Been there ever since, looking to make Jesus known in that village.
And we're going to hear a little bit more about that. If you ever drive along that A50 road that goes from the M1 over to Stoke, then Derby is one side. Hilton's just the other side.
That's right. Yeah, just off the A50.
And if you ever bought a car in the East Midlands, you've probably been to Hilton. You just haven't realised it. There's a massive car showroom. There we go. Just in case you want a new car, Graham.
Great, thanks for the tip.
A used car.
Yeah.
And there we are. We're here to talk about church planting. This is part of a little series thinking about church planting. Different kinds of church plant as well. We're trying to explore each of those in turn. Mark, you've got some very specific experience, which we're going to get to in just a moment. Yeah. Graham, just outline for us the different kinds of church plant that we're thinking about.
Yeah, we've divided them into three. There are finer distinctions to make, but broad brush, mother-daughter plants, group go down the road from a larger mother church, usually a parachute plant. People call it different things, but basically where you begin somewhere completely new in the country. There is no mother church down the road. You have to gather people to start to parachute into a new area. And then a revitalization or a replant where you take a group and new leadership into a pre-existing congregation.
Now, I've never been in a church plant from scratch, but even I can see that there are very different issues that are going to arise in each of those. There'll be some commonality.
Yep.
You know, starting fresh or restarting fresh, there'll be some commonality, but some very different issues, which is why we're tackling them one by one.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly.
And Mark Selby, here you are. Not the Crucible Mark Selby, but the better one. You are... which of those? You're a parachute, as
we are.
Yeah,
parachute stroke skydiving.
Okay. So we want to hear a little bit more about the church plant in Hilton. Hilton, just tell us a bit more about Hilton itself.
Yeah.
I've only ever driven in to where you live.
Yeah.
And the car showroom and your house.
Just
they're my two reference points in Hilton.
Yeah. Sure. Okay.
Which feels both feel quite in quite sort of modern area of housing and.
Yeah.
So tell us what sort of place is Hilton?
Yep. So Hilton would have been quite a quaint old village years and years ago.
Does it still have that centre?
It does.
Identity?
Yeah. The main street is still the old part of the village.
Okay.
But it's now a modern sprawling housing estate like you'd see in lots of places across the UK. Population is about 10,000
people now. Okay, it's not insubstantial.
Kind of a small town size. Used to have the largest primary school in Derbyshire, one of the biggest in the country. So that kind of gives you an idea of the demographics. Lots of working families, professionals, a generation with children, basically. That's the majority of the population.
Okay. And growing still? New housing being built?
Yeah. There's still a few houses being built, but most of the building work is at least paused at the moment. But there's potential for more houses to be built, potentially joining up with the next village.
And not a million miles from Derby. I mean, how long would it take to drive into centre Derby?
Yeah, so my wife works at the hospital in Derby. Takes 10 minutes down the fast roads.
Okay.
So we're a distinct geographical area, which I think has
and
helped.
And being the other side of the A50, presumably from Derby, makes a difference.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so we're surrounded by countryside, but very easy links in Derby.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And in terms of before you arrived on the scene, what was going on church-wise?
Yeah. So there were and there still are two traditional denominational churches in Hilton. As far as we were aware, not known for clearly making the gospel known.
Yeah. Yeah.
And regardless of that, the population was growing and we wanted to be there to be a compelling, clear gospel witness in that village.
So a place of gospel need. And we've talked before, haven't we, Graham, that if you sort of take 10% as a very arbitrary number of people you'd love to see in church, that would mean 1,000 people in church Hilton on a Sunday morning, which of course is nothing like. No, is it?
Which means there are areas of gospel need everywhere.
Yeah.
But the other thing to ask about is distinct communities that don't have a clear gospel witness within them, even if Derby's not so far away, will people get in the car and drive to Derby to find
church? So it's more complicated then than just looking at a map and saying, look, there's no church there, no church there. We need to understand how places work.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think the geography comes into it because you can say there's no church in sight, but how do social demographics work and how people move and how will they ever get introduced to something? And if they did, would they drive to Derby? In some cases, they would. You know, some small villages are used to going into the larger nearby town.
Yeah, yeah.
Others, not so much. So there are lots of different factors in assessing need, but we can all say there are lots of areas of need.
Of course. Yeah, of course. And we can all think about those where we are and identify them pretty quickly, probably.
Yeah, that's right. I think that kind of geographical feature of being in Hilton has been quite important for us, both practically in terms of being geographically defined, but also convictionally. We've wanted to start and build a church under God's grace that is for the people of Hilton, with the people of Hilton. And there's a few different reasons behind that. We've wanted to be primarily all in the same geographical location so that we can be with each other easily. It's much easier to walk 5 minutes down the road to be with someone than drive 10 minutes into Derby to see someone. We're all rubbing shoulders with the same kind of people in the village. We're all getting to know different people, but there's a lot of overlap at times as well. So we're building those connections and those opportunities for witness with the same people. Like you say, Graham, recognizing the features of an area, what distinguishes an area from one to the other. That's been really helpful just in terms of getting to know an area, getting to know the kind of need, getting to know the kind of people and how we can be making the gospel known. And
presumably
in
there
place.
Is a world of different, I mean, size at that point does make a difference. If you live in a hamlet of 50 people, there might be a really strong sense of identity. You know, this is our village. But saying to someone, come to church with me 10 minutes down the road is not as odd in a, well, essentially a small town of 10,000 people, which has its own school and its own shops and its own car showroom, is saying to someone, come into Derby with me to church. Well, actually, we've got everything else here. Why would I go? So, size at that point does make a difference, doesn't it? All those dynamics are in play.
That's right.
It does.
And I think for us as well, there's an authenticity about inviting someone from Hilton to be with Hilton people. We're not... people may ask the question, well, why aren't you taking me to a church in Hilton if that's what we were doing?
Does Hilton have its own, do you have a doctor surgery?
Have a doctor surgery,
So people are staying in Hilton for primary school, they're staying in Hilton for doctor surgery, they're staying in Hilton for the corner shop, the convenience store, all those things are there. So at that point, it's odd then to go somewhere else for church.
Yeah, I think so. And people obviously commute out of Hilton for work, nearby industries, but... Hilton has got quite an identity of a place that you
got it.
You stay, you enjoy.
So why Hilton in terms of church need? We've answered that, but why on earth Hilton for you? Was there a connection? Hear about the place? How did it come about?
I grew up in Derby, so I'm close to
so
where
you knew about Hilton.
So my head teacher when I was in junior school lived in Hilton.
Okay.
Not that I was...
He wanted to be away from all the pupils.
That's it. Yeah. He didn't have a particular influence on my life, but I always remember hearing about Hilton all those years ago. Yeah. There's a number of areas across Derby that are gospel needy places. 12 years ago, when I started thinking about planting, I discussed ideas with a group of church leaders. I was part of a preaching group, a bit like a Derby Gospel Partnership.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were thinking about different areas around Derby that needed a church plant. Hilton was one of those places that was mentioned.
Right, okay.
It's a fairly middle-class area. There were some other areas in Derby that were more working class and perhaps more challenging in terms of social deprivation. And on one hand, I have a heart for these places to be reached as well. That's not really my background. And I think recognizing the challenges of starting a church plant small anyway, if we're then to move in a completely different, into a completely different situation socially, which we wouldn't have been used to, that would have perhaps been another step.
Another difficulty on top of a
too
difficulty.
Too far, yeah. So for that kind of reason, location to my wife's work, it was halfway between Burton-on-Trent and Derby. We were living in Burton-on-Trent previously. So for those kind of reasons, okay. And that distinct geographical location well, Hilton seemed.
Okay. Can I just ask you a follow-up question to that? Why church planting in the first place? Why was that on your heart?
Yeah, sure. So for my last 3 years of working for a church in Burton, I did what's now called Crosslands training.
Yeah.
At the start of those 3 years, I'd never really heard of church planting, didn't really know what it was. By the end of those 3 years, that's what I had a heart for. Because we're not called as Christians to be lone rangers in reaching people with the gospel. We're called to be doing that together in community as God's people, as a church. Making Jesus known verbally, but also through that care and that collective witness that we show as a church.
Yeah.
And in my mind, the most effective way for reaching the UK with the gospel is to see lots more church plants scattered.
Yeah. Graham, if only you just preached on that at the 2025 Leaders Conference, we could put a link to the notes when it's ready.
Well, but it'll be ready.
That was your sermon at our recent Leaders Conference.
Yeah, that's where we were doing Acts and end of Acts 2, mission. The goal of mission is church.
Yeah.
And then church is the base for
church
mission.
Church is the vehicle for how that happens.
Yeah.
Okay. So, conviction we all share. Yeah. Tell us a bit more about the story, Mark. So how long ago did all this take place?
Yep, so 2013, we arrived in Hilton.
So we're over 10 years in.
Yep, over 10
Tell
years in.
Tell us how things got started.
So there was quite a lot of time beforehand thinking about these ideas. The preaching group that I've mentioned was kind of critical, really, to things happening. In that, there was myself and my fellow elder, Chris, who did training with me as well. Chris was willing to move with me and my wife and daughter into Hilton.
Are you both in the same church in Burton?
Or no, in Chris was at a church in Derby.
Okay.
But connections through the preaching group again, and then through Crosslands Seminary. Yeah. I had this idea for planting. Chris joined me with that. We then talked with the preaching group and said, really, is this the right kind of place? Are we the right kind of people to be doing this? Would you back what we're doing, endorse what we're doing? So we've got a kind of stamp of approval on us rather than just being almost cult-like.
So when we're talking about Parachute, Graham, just to interrupt you, Mark, we're not talking about Lone Ranger here.
No.
Even if you have a little core team, it's not just the Lord's put this in my head, I'm just going to go and do it. There's a bit more nuance to it than that.
At least I think there ought to be.
Yeah, okay.
Sometimes there is a Lone Ranger who says, I'm going to
plant
a church.
That can work.
Mm. And hey, in God's kindness, that can work. Yeah. And someone could be a gifted evangelist and start to see a church flourish.
Yeah.
What I think is usually what's more normal and what is healthier is to have a leader or leaders and then a small core team who can form the nucleus of the new church. Okay. And sometimes, and Mark will tell us in a second what theirs was, sometimes that's really very small. Sometimes it's half a dozen or a dozen people. We'll talk a bit more about that maybe later on as to how you gather that team. Mm. But Mark, how was it you started at that stage?
So after quite a long time of trying to sell our house in Burton, we eventually managed to move to Hilton. We were there for a couple of months before we then formally left the church that I was now at in Derby, a time of a year of encouragement and refreshing, really. Sent out from that church and started meeting together as a a very small church.
How small is very small?
There were four adults and our daughter and our Labrador.
So you could, you could fit in a podcast studio.
I certainly could fit in a podcast studio. Okay. And so we certainly fitted in our lounge. So that's where we started meeting.
Was that you and Chris?
Yeah, so myself and Chris, one of Chris's friends from his church in Bath when he was down there, my wife Anna and our daughter Keris. So yeah, we were very glad to be there, but it was pretty daunting, really, starting just so small. Four of us, how on earth are we going to reach Hilton with the size it was with the gospel? But on that very first Sunday, we started working through Luke's gospel and those first four verses about the certainty of the gospel.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was just a wonderful encouragement, wonderful to of God to put that on our heart for the first passage we preached on. There were lots of things unknown. There were lots of things we could be nervous about, but how great that the gospel has been carefully investigated, that it's certain, and that just gave us lots of confidence to get going and keep going, really.
I guess in my pragmatic mind, I would be saying, well, wait until you've got 10 people.
Yeah, sure.
You know, at least wait until that point. That would still be a small number.
Yeah.
But wait until you've got 10.
Yeah, yeah.
And then get going. So what was it that sort of just made you think, let's just go for it from the start?
Yeah, sure. I think primarily lost people are dying without knowing
urgent.
Jesus.
It's urgent.
Very urgent. I think in our situation, because I had Chris with me, convictionally, I'm convinced that there should be a plurality of elders. Right. So we already had that.
So you had that. And you had a kids group.
We had a kids group. Yeah, we had a small children's
blessing service.
Yeah,
you were all ready to go.
Yeah. Yep. And we had a couple more adults with us. And I suppose in that sense, it took some boldness just to be convinced that we can be a small church community like this. We were a church, but we also had a missionary mindset, really. We were like being missionaries in a unreached, unknown area. Okay. Yeah, yeah. And I think to have that at the back of our minds was helpful as well. So that whilst we operated as a church, that I guess primarily the encouragement from being a part of a bigger church and the blessings that brings, that was going to grow as time went on.
It is interesting thinking about a mission team, and if a church said we want to send some missionaries to X country, Turkey, wherever, and we've got a couple with their daughter and we've got two single people and they're going to work together as a mission team, I think everyone would think, hey, what a great team.
Yeah, especially if you had a Labrador as well.
And if you could take your pet, then you're quits in.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
So is to think mission team rather than established church from day one.
Slightly different way of thinking, isn't it?
I mean, there are pros and cons, and we'll come to what it's like to grow from there in a second, but it's just that change of thinking I think is really helpful in resetting expectations. But what was it like then to grow? I mean, I guess imagine inviting someone to your living room with your three other congregation members or whatever.
Yeah.
Four.
You've got a nice living room, Mark. I've been in it. Plenty of space.
Yeah. Tell us about those early stages of growth and what it was like, either non-Christians visiting or other Christians maybe coming and checking you out.
Yeah,
how did that work?
Yeah. Key to that really was just getting known in the community.
How do you do that?
So, I mean, the Labrador came in handy in terms you know, walking around and meeting people. Our strategy really to get to know people and also in terms of evangelism has always been to get involved in things going on in Hilton.
Right.
I think probably particularly because of the area we live in, the kind of population that's there, we're not in a place where people would naturally want to come to a church. It's not a church going mentality, you know, in the population. So we've very, very quickly, we joined things in the village, a dog walking group, indoor bowls, cubs, school governors, all these different kind of things.
Snooker?
I know. snooker hall.
You missed an opportunity there, Mark.
Come and
play Mark Selby at snooker.
Right, the Mark Selby snooker club. Yeah. But yeah, just made a real effort to get involved in lots of different things. I think Chris started a board game evening. Yeah. And that's where one of the couples who first joined us, he got to know them. Mm-hmm. And that was really the main way we got to meet people. Yeah.
And then people came from any of those contacts to your living room on a Sunday?
So, relatively quickly, several couples joined with us.
Christians.
Right. Yep. In a lot of cases, they were people who had lived in Hilton for several years, but hadn't made church priority in recent years.
Okay.
So as you can imagine, that meant that a lot of those people were starting from quite far back in terms of Christian
maturity.
And that's
quite a big step for them.
Yes.
Because to go, I mean, you can't sit in the back row in someone's living room.
No, that's
every,
right.
Every seat is a front row
seat. Yeah, indeed. Yeah, that's right. And it would be very different to their experience of church previously as well. Yeah. Particularly because, we were in our lounge, but we also built in right from the start, always eating together as a church as well, spending that extended time together. So it for lots of these people, it was quite a big step to join us in that way.
Yeah.
Relatively quickly, we got a bit too big for our lounge. So we moved into the village hall for our meetings and then back to our house or someone else's house for lunch together after that.
What did your relationship with the church in Derby look like over those first few months and years?
Yeah. It was and still is wonderful, really. So the preaching group that I've been part of is made up of lots of different evangelical churches, not just FIEC churches. But it's been great to see the unity and diversity that's come through that. Been great to have their prayer support for us over the years. In those early years in particular, several of the churches gave us donations financially, which meant we could afford to pay rent and things like that. We didn't have a huge budget, but
why didn't explain that a little bit. You've described two elders here. Why was it you didn't have a huge budget?
So our vision for planting was to be creative and flexible so that we could have people on the ground there in Hilton. So that meant for us being self-supporting. So in the early days, we were largely dependent on my wife's salary. I raised some funds through stewardship as well, where people could give to support us. Chris had a job at the university library and then gave some days to the church as well. So we've always been self-supporting. That's kind of looked different at different stages of family life and as the years have gone on. Initially, I was looking after our children when they needed childcare at home. And then as that's changed through the years, I've taken on a technology job as well that I give several hours to each week. But that gave us the freedom, really, to be able to be there on the ground without worrying about if we'd have enough money to pay salaries, for example, in years to come. Having the churches in Derby behind us meant we had some of those funds to pay things like room rent and equipment. But also, I think, really, just the encouragement, particularly through the first, 5, 6, 12 years. But particularly in those early days where we were still, we're still small now, but when we were very small. And growth is just hard and long and slow. So to have, one of those church leaders just ask how things are going when we met up for a day's teaching or whatever, and just that encouragement and keep going, that meant a lot, really.
So you're not isolated.
We're not isolated. That was essential, really.
And just jump to now. Describe Grace Church Hilton now.
Yeah, sure. So we're still relatively small. We were probably around 30 or so on a Sunday morning. So we meet in the village hall. We do all the things that you'd expect to find in any normal church, really. And we now split into...
Does your PowerPoint go wrong? That's the mark of a really good church,
we're not
normal. I think.
We don't have PowerPoint and we don't have Apple Mac computers.
Okay, there you go.
Sorry about that.
You're not really a church planter.
No, right? No, that's it. But yes, we meet in the village hall. We split into two houses for our lunches together afterwards. Okay. We have lunch together midweek and then Bible study. Just see each other. When we can, through the week as well.
Tell us about some of the challenges along the way. What have been the real fragile points for you, Mark?
Yeah,
do you mind sharing some of those?
We've not been immune to all the normal things that happen in churches.
Right.
Marriage breakups. People not always being happy staying with us. So people having left. People having... arrived, investing in people.
So it's not for everyone.
No, that's right. Yeah, it's not. That's right. And I think it's getting that balance between being gentle and gracious towards people, recognizing where they're at, but also trying to build that church culture where we do spend extended time together, because we want church to be more than just a meeting people attend.
Yeah,
it's a family we belong to. I think eating together and living in the same location really contributes to that and has been key. Some of those, not all necessarily, but some of those difficulties have been from having a small core team and shape and set and be the example of what we want church to be. But when that core team is small and then you get more people joining in, which are the larger majority, dilute that picture perhaps, and those expectations. Yeah. So that's hard.
Has that felt like there's been a particular weight on you and Chris, I guess, especially in your families, but other people who are at the
I think perhaps perhaps my wife and children feel that in particular. Chris and I have made the choice to be elders of the church and to lead the church. Anna and the children love Grace Church, they're totally involved, but they haven't had the choice in that same way. So when you invest in people, and that's costly just in terms of emotions and opening our house to people, and then they leave, and when that's not repeated very often, but it is a repeated cycle just in normal church life, that's costly and hard, and... You feel the cost.
You feel all those things more, I think, both when church is small and when church is new.
Yeah.
It feels more fragile.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
As you say, the normal things of church life, in a sense, it's magnified.
That's Graham, the particular challenge, you think, for this kind of church plant? So we talked about these three ingredients before: the leadership, the vision, the core group.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like Mark, had a very clear vision, wanted to reach this place. They understood it. They were going there because they had a vision for the place. You had a leadership strategy in place from day one. You wanted a plurality of leadership. Mm-hmm. So you and Chris, you knew how that was going to work.
Yeah.
Actually, it feels like that core team element could always be the most fragile part of this kind of church plan. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, it often is. Obviously, it varies from place to place. And in some instances, you may struggle, for example, to find another key leader.
Yeah, so there might not be a Chris.
So there might not be a Chris.
Yeah.
In other cases, the vision might be more kind of contested between some of the core people to begin with.
Yeah.
So it's not that those other issues aren't in play. They can be. But in parachute planting, I think inevitably, because you're talking about starting somewhere new, finding core team people is usually the biggest challenge. And it's either people who are willing to move there, which is obviously a
big thing,
which may mean, I mean, it might be close enough that you could keep your job and commute to it, but you're almost certainly moving kids in schools. You're obviously moving home, sometimes moving job as well. Or it might be people who are there, but who are traveling out to church, going elsewhere, and they would love a local church.
But they might not share your particular vision of what a local church
is. And then the question is, what's their vision? What do they want?
Yeah.
And so finding those people, drawing that group together so that you have a group of believers who want to form this church, that's usually the biggest challenge. Mm. And I'm talking to someone now planting in Tamworth. They've got a core group currently of around 8 adults.
Okay.
So twice yours.
Yeah.
but still very small. Mm, and that's the biggest challenge. And they're looking at launching, but obviously starting again, quite small.
Mm, yeah.
And then that can feel, if you're thinking church looks like a certain thing on a Sunday, with those sorts of numbers, it can look quite different.
Yeah.
But there is a gospel church in Hilton. And 15 years ago, there wasn't.
Yeah.
There is somewhere for someone to go and hear the good news. Mm. And that must thrill you. I mean, you know, there's lots of hiccups and struggles along the way, but that must thrill you, mustn't it, Mark?
Yeah, it does. It does. And it's great there's that gospel church proclaiming the good news.
Yeah.
It just made me think, actually, how wonderful it is that that's not from us. That's, we can be there proclaiming the good news because God's given us that good news.
Yeah.
And we just seek to be faithful in making it known. But it's great to be there doing
so that. So perhaps you're part of a preaching group, you're listening in or watching in. Perhaps you could be talking about some of the places around you that really need what Hilton needed and Hilton has now got. Great. Yeah. Mark, thanks so much for joining us. Well, great to hear that story. I know a little bit of that story, but it's great to hear it again and just be excited about it all over again.
Yeah.
And just think, actually, these small little incremental things, this is how the country is going to get reached in some of these places. It's not just about mega churches in UK terms in city centres. It's about Grace Church Hilton, isn't it?
Absolutely. So, absolutely. We need more.
Great. Thank you so much for listening. If you've been interested in this, do get in contact with you. We'd love to talk to you about church planting. And please do rate and review the podcast. That helps other people find it. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.